This episode is brought to you by the Cambie Liquor Store. With their ever-growing selection of spirits, beers, and local wines, as well as some awesome gifts that you can't find anywhere else, there's so much more than your average liquor store. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to the Cambie Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The inevitable has happened. The coronavirus has come to Cambie. An employee at a local farming operation tested positive for COVID-19 last week by Clackamas County Public Health, according to a person with knowledge of the situation who is not authorized to speak publicly. The individual worked inside a pre-production facility and did not have direct contact with the public or food products, according to our source. The source says a team from Clackamas County Public Health visited the facility last week to perform contact tracing and notify other employees who may have been exposed. A number of employees have been directed to self-isolate for 14 days in accordance with CDC guidelines and the recommendations of local health officials, according to the source. The individual with confirmed COVID-19 is also at home and following isolation protocols. Reached Sunday morning, a spokesman for Clackamas County declined to confirm a connection with any of the county's positive cases to a local food production facility. He also declined to confirm that a public health team had been deployed there for contact tracing. He did not say why. Tim Hyder, the county's coronavirus public information officer, said only, quote, "I can confirm that there is no risk to the public," end quote. Local officials also could not confirm the case. Both Mayor Brian Hodson and Fire District Chief Jim Davis said they had not been informed of any confirmed cases in Cambie. Chief Davis said he thought it would be difficult to verify an infected person's place of employment or city of residence due to HIPAA protections, unless the individual or company volunteered the information. The company did not respond to requests for comment this weekend. The Cambie Now podcast is not naming the company at this time. According to the latest numbers from Oregon Health Authority, 12 of the state's 161 positive cases have been linked to Clackamas County. More than 260 county residents have tested negative for the virus. COVID-19 has claimed another life in Oregon, raising the state's death toll to 5. The latest victim was a resident of the Oregon Veterans Home in Lebanon, where 14 residents had tested positive for the coronavirus. This was the first reported death linked to the disease. According to officials, the resident was a World War II and Korean War veteran in his 90s who had tested positive on March 11th and died early Sunday morning at the Veterans Home. He had underlying medical conditions. "Our hearts are very heavy," said Kelly Fitzpatrick, director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. This resident was a veteran who served our nation with honor and dignity in its hour of need. He was also a beloved member of our Lebanon community, and he was deeply and truly will be missed. On behalf of everyone at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Oregon Veterans Home, we offer our sincere condolences to his family and loved ones. We grieve with them. Officials continue to urge all Oregonians to take steps to protect themselves, their families, and those who are most vulnerable to complications from COVID-19. Those considered high risk include adults 60 and older, or anyone with a serious health condition, including lung or heart problems, kidney disease, diabetes, or anyone who has a suppressed immune system. People vulnerable to complications should follow CDC recommendations to stay at home as much as possible and avoid gatherings. Every resident should take these basic steps to protect themselves and those most at risk. Cover your mouth and nose when you cough and sneeze. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Regularly clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces like bathrooms, desks, countertops, doorknobs, computer keyboards, faucet handles, toys, and cell phones. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, or mouth with unwashed hands. Stay home and away from others if you are ill. After someone contracts COVID-19, illness usually develops within 14 days. Symptoms mirror those of the flu, including fever, cough, runny nose, headache, sore throat, and general feelings of illness. For the latest information, visit www.healthoregon.org/coronavirus. On Friday night, Governor Kate Brown, Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori, and Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler held a press conference urging Oregonians to stay home and stay healthy on the eve of what was known before the corona pandemic as spring break. Here's Governor Brown.
We are standing here together on the eve of spring break with a very important message for Oregonians. Social distancing, done well and done early, saves lives. We have agreed on a plan called Stay Home, Stay Healthy, which is both an order and a public awareness campaign. We have put into place aggressive social distancing orders to protect you, our neighbors, and our most vulnerable Oregonians. I have been very clear. Social distancing measures are the most effective way to flatten the curve and slow the spread of the virus. But these measures don't work unless we all follow them every single day.
It was not a lockdown, leaders stressed, but they used just about all other language imaginable in calling for people to not go out in public unless absolutely necessary, and said they were drafting a statewide order this weekend to that effect. Evidently, no one was listening. Thousands flooded Oregon's beaches and campgrounds and hiking trails this weekend, to the alarm of local officials in those communities and public health experts across the state. The city of Warrenton took extraordinary action, passing an emergency resolution that essentially makes it illegal for anyone from elsewhere to stay the night in any of the town's hotels, short-term rentals, or campgrounds. Other coastal cities followed suit, some passing similar orders, others simply posting statements ordering visitors to stay away. It's unfamiliar territory for these communities who have heavily relied on tourism as an important part of their local economies. But times have changed. Astoria Mayor Bruce Jones described the weekend's influx almost in terms of an invasion, saying he was, quote, appalled by the sight of tens of thousands of irresponsible vacationers flocking to the coast, as if this was just another spring break week with callous disregard for residents' health and safety, end quote. On Sunday, Governor Brown doubled down on her previous comments, offering a clear message to the would-be spring breakers. I want to be absolutely clear. You are endangering all Oregonians when not following social distance orders, end quote. She spoke ominously of the storm that is coming, saying we only need to look to Washington, California, and New York to get a glimpse. But she added, we still have time to change its course. That's why I have put aggressive social distancing orders in place, she said, but it takes each and every one of you to comply with them to stop the spread of COVID-19. These actions are necessary to save lives, she concluded. Please stay at home. It's a matter of life or death. Governor Kate Brown took her latest extraordinary step in the fight against coronavirus Sunday, issuing an executive order that places a statewide temporary moratorium on residential evictions for non-payment. The order is effective for 90 days. Through no fault of their own, many Oregonians have lost jobs, closed businesses, and found themselves without a source of income to pay rent and other housing costs during this coronavirus outbreak, Governor Brown said. The last thing we need to do during this crisis is turn out more Oregonians struggling to make ends meet from their homes and onto the streets. This is both a moral and a public health imperative. Keeping people in their homes is the right thing for Oregon families and for preventing the further spread of COVID-19. Under the governor's emergency powers, the order places a temporary hold throughout Oregon on law enforcement actions relating to residential evictions for not paying rent. Recognizing that landlords and property owners face their own costs if tenants are not able to pay rent, the governor and her Coronavirus Economic Advisory Council are engaging leaders to find potential solutions and are exploring various state and federal policy options that might be available to provide assistance to borrowers or other options for relief. Oregon Housing and Community Services and the Department of Consumer and Business Services are also pursuing relief options at the direction of the governor. This latest order is part of the governor's coronavirus housing and homelessness strategy, which includes expanding shelter capacity with social distancing measures in place, identifying emergency COVID-19 shelter options for people experiencing homelessness who must be isolated or quarantined, exploring options for rent assistance, seeking expansion of federal eviction moratoriums, and homeowner foreclosure avoidance. Clackamas County Commissioners had earlier this week voted unanimously to support their own countywide moratorium on evictions, though theirs also applied to commercial properties and business renters. "This is a tough time," said Clackamas County Chair Jim Bernard. "Businesses are being challenged, and renters are being challenged because they can't go to work. We ask that business owners and property owners not evict people," end quote.
The Cambie Now podcast is brought to you in part by Direct Link, where technology meets tradition. Cambie's longest running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, Direct Link has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, Direct Link paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
Well, it's that time. I want to thank people for helping us continue to do this work because, man, it is so hard out there. And we are so lucky and so blessed to be doing this. So we want to extend our undying gratitude to our Cambie Now Plus members, Tim and Kelsey Cordill. And I'm pretty sure I got their name right, so I'm getting better. And if I got it wrong, then I'm par for the course. We do rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit cambienowpod.com/plus.
Thank you for listening to Cambie Now Podcast.
I am out on an almost 150-year-old farm. I feel like I'm just surrounded by history. I'm sitting at this table with all these old photographs and amazing letters from war, from the World War II. Why don't you guys introduce yourself to the listeners?
So I'm Georgia Baker. Yeah. Grew up here on the farm.
Also known as George.
Also known as George.
Yeah, which is a family name.
Yes,
it is. That we'll talk about.
Yes.
And your cousin over here.
And I'm Gloria Shear Vincenzi.
Thank you guys so much for being on the show. So, yeah, like I said, this farm has been in your family for
almost 150 years mm-hmm. and has been a working farm for all that time. It's just amazing. Like, we're going to tell and share some incredible stories like on this podcast. But there are so many families and farms around here that are could tell stories as well. I mean, it's just amazing that mm-hmm. the heritage.
A lot of old families.
Yeah, the yeah. heritage that our area has. So really, like, as we're sharing some of these stories, it's kind of, it's not just your family stories, but it's the story of our area and our region.
Mm-hmm.
So, George, can you maybe start us off telling some of the history of your great-grandfather, who originally bought this farm and kind of started things off here?
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, great-grandpa George... We were of German descent,
right.
And
George Shear
came over, and I believe they started in Kansas
mm-hmm.
and made their way out here. He and a couple of siblings, and
so he was born in 1849,
right?
And your husband Ken, I'm gonna butcher this, but he said he was born in a place called Weisenheimenberg.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And it was a great wine growing region.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere by the Black Forest.
Okay.
So
yeah.
that part of Germany, that little bit we found with the paperwork that we have.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right. And then he married
Anna. Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, they didn't homestead, but they definitely had a home out here and raised their children.
Yeah, so their farm was originally part of the Klinger
mm-hmm.
land claim.
Yep.
And George, he immigrated in 1870 from Germany and made his way out here pretty quick.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, bought the farm in 1876.
Right.
So was he the George Shear that was involved in the car garage? We've been talking about that.
That would be our grandpa.
Okay. Okay. So we'll talk about that in a little bit.
He's recording.
It's okay. We've had dogs on the podcast before. So George Shear married Anna. They had 5 kids, 3 of whom survived into adulthood.
Correct.
Philip, Mary, and your grandpa, also named George Shear.
Yeah.
Kind of a sad ending to the original George Shear. Tell us about
right.
that.
So he, back in those days, everybody farmed with horses, and you had livestock and animals, and he apparently was kicked in the head, and it caused severe migraines that were quite painful, and very severe depression. So the newspaper article reads that due to some mental illness issues, he went back to Kansas to be with friends, stayed there a few months, and then hung himself in the barn.
Yeah, very sad.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Just a tough life.
Yeah, yeah. And that was, in a friend's barn near
mm-hmm.
near Lawrence, Kansas. But
correct.
Obviously, yeah, back then, and even now, I mean, we're just now kind of coming to a better understanding of traumatic brain injuries and
mm-hmm.
how those can affect behavior. So back here, the family kind of soldiered on. At that time, his son Philip was running the farm, but that later transitioned to your grandpa, as I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think the 3 kids, so George Sr., his 3 kids, Philip and our grandpa George and Aunt Mary, who
mm.
is lovingly known as Crazy Aunt Mary.
And there's a photo here of her.
There is a photo. And she...
Lovely.
Aunt Mary actually lived in a home on our property.
Mm-hmm.
We don't live in the same house, but my father built a home. But
yeah.
Aunt Mary did live here. She never married.
Mm-hmm.
She had some mental health issues as well and ended up passing in Pendleton at a facility.
Yeah. Yeah.
For mental health issues.
And
so.
We kind of laugh a little bit about it, about the name Crazy Aunt Mary, but I mean, she did actually have mental health. It wasn't like nowadays where you might have a crazy aunt or
no,
crazy
she
uncle.
Wasn't just wild. She was mentally unstable.
Gloria, you were saying that your mom would sort of like hug you close or whatnot when she would come by or
that
fear.
Grandma Lily would do that, and she once in a while bring us down here to Aunt Mary's house. Mm-hmm. And when we went inside, she definitely kept a hold of us, you right. know, and she was like, and it was just all I could do. I wanted to get loose in that house so yeah. badly.
Why and was that?
Just to look around.
Curiosity.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And of course, to me, it was all fascinating, right, you know, right. and to my grandmother, it was like, you stay right here and hang on to me.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I feel like the biggest difference between kids and grown-ups is the ability to feel fear,
yeah.
right? Like, kids are so fearless, and,
yeah.
and we look at them, and we're just like, how are you not, like, terrified? How can you just, yeah, yeah. No, that's fun. George Scheer II, both of your grandfathers,
mm-hmm.
He was involved in that first automobile business that came to
right.
Canby, the White and Scheer Garage, which with Grant W. White,
mm-hmm.
That later became Canby Ford or
yeah
was,
right.
I mean, I don't
right.
know. Yeah.
Somehow it's kind of foggy for us. We're not sure how it all transitioned. But
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. It was the first Ford dealership. I'm not sure if that actually is what is now Canby Ford.
No, it's the auto import. It's Ace Glass.
That building, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The building is,
mm-hmm.
but.
Yeah.
It was quite a surprise when I found that out.
Really?
I had no clue. And then, so I went up to Aunt Nome, who lived up on the family matriarch
yeah.
place, you know. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me about this? You know, she's always telling things. And
right.
she goes, oh, I didn't like that very well, she says.
And she, go ahead.
She just was not enamored with Grandpa's partner for some reason.
Oh, that's and, what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so she just... Well, oh, please, I don't want to talk about
that. I love that. I thought it was because he was, it would have been surprising because he was all about the horses. Like, weren't you saying that he used horses here on the farm until
yeah.
like the 50s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he and my dad.
Yeah.
So my dad grew up farming with horses.
Yeah.
So we were just discussing, I know Frank was one mm-hmm. of the horses, and I...
Oh, with their names, sir?
Yeah, and yeah. I feel like it was Princess. It was either Princess or Queenie, and I can never remember which. Anyway, so that was just always something. Dad had his team,
uh-huh.
and that was something we had a common interest
yeah, yeah.
in. So.
Tell me more about your grandpa and what he was like.
He was quite gruff.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... But he could then again just turn around.
He was a Depression era farmer, right?
Right.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
And he would come in every night and sit by the wood stove there in the kitchen. There was a little trash burner there. And that's where he would sit and take his boots off. And,
well, not, are you talking about Grandpa George or my dad?
No, Grandpa George.
Oh, he did it too.
Oh,
huh?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
They had a little chair right there, and that's where they sat and took their messy boots off and stuff. And of course, Grandma's just gritting her teeth, and
right.
as soon as they'd get their boots off and maybe go in to take their bath or whatever, she'd get the broom out and sweep up the mud and throw it out the front door into the lawn, you know.
Yeah.
That's where dirt goes.
Yeah, you're going to kick him out and make him sleep in the barn if he's
going to
behave.
She
like
wouldn't
that.
Have said a gruff word to those two ever.
Yeah.
Especially not George's dad.
Yeah.
Oh,
Bobby.
Man. Bobby. That was her little Bobby.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard working, though.
Oh. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very. Very.
Yeah. How big was the farm in those days?
It went from Maxford Road down over the hill to both sides of the road on the bottom, which it
had to be close to 200 acres.
Oh, yeah.
It had to be.
Yeah. And what's left, 80-some now?
Well, we've got 100, and
you've
got yours.
Oh, yeah, and we've got...
What do you got, 5 acres over there, probably?
Well, we got 5 on top of the hill, and then we bought
oh, that's
down
right.
to the bottom,
yeah.
down to yours again, so...
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have, like, 20-some. So.
Yeah.
Are you guys totally in Philbert now or mostly in Philbert? Mostly. Back then it was, you said, mostly wheats and oat. Yeah, just to farm, you know, maybe as much as 200 acres by hand with a couple of horses.
But that's the community thing I got since the other siblings had bought property and had somewhat raised their families here. It was a family affair, and the one brother, Philip, as the story I'm told, and I don't know how true this one is, that he had died during harvest, and all the neighbors came around and helped Aunt Martha finish the harvest. So it was a different, families worked together. And I kind of grew up that way as well, because Dad with Junior Cracksburger and all those, and Norman Cracksburger.
And they all helped each other.
They all combined, and Dale drove combine and fixed it for everybody, and they'd work here for a day or two and harvest the wheat or the oats, whatever they had, and then they'd go off over to, you know, Junior's place and finish up his, and then Norman's, and year after year, that's how I grew up, was all summer they were just combining together and fixing rigs together, and Uncle Louie was always snuffing out his cigarette in his hand. And, I mean, that's just how it was. That community was, you just worked together because you had to.
I still have friends in Molalla that worked for Uncle Bob when they were teenagers, hauling hay.
Yeah.
And to this day, I run into those boys, and they're very well known over there. It's called the Roars Boys. But I run into them, and they treat me just like a little sister. And they always talk about the meals that my grandmother would fix at noon.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Bob would bring the whole crew in for a huge meal at noon. And Grandma, she cooked, you know. But the boys still, that was how nice Bob was, and the meals your grandma used to cook.
Mm-hmm.
They remember that to this day, and they're well into age now, you know.
Yeah.
They'll kill me for saying that.
Well, maybe they won't listen to the podcast. I love hearing those stories because, you know, you hear a lot about development, you know, of farms and how they're getting put in housing or industrial land, you know, as cities grow. But, and people, you know, are sad about that or upset about that, but it's not often talked about, like, what actually is being lost in some of that, and the big part I think is that community. That's what's so sad, that you know, that those bonds that are formed where you're literally working together to live and to prosper, but literally to survive. Like you're growing food together and things.
Yeah.
Things of that sort, and now, you know, so many more people can live on those farms when they're turned into houses, but those, they don't know each other at all in the ways that the family farms did, and you know, because of circumstance. I'm not going to say pro con, like it should, I mean, it's just the way things are.
It was an era.
Yeah, yeah, but something is lost in that. Maybe some things are gained, but some things are lost as well.
I had, when we decided to actually build a house over here, and that was in 2000, I had so many of the neighbors call me and say, oh, we're so glad you're going to finally be back on the farm.
They
did. Yeah. And, you know, and Georgia and Ken, of course, have just done wonders with this place.
Yeah.
And it looks so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You come down the road, and we decided that the barn was going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And our grandpa built that barn, and there's hand-hewed timbers in that barn.
Yeah, something like 1890, you know, was saying.
Yeah. And so it was, it's just like Georgia said, it's a community, and it's going to stay that way. A lot of our friends live on their folks' place out around here, so it's, I hope it'll stay that way.
Yeah.
And I will say, the neighbors down the road, since we are kind of fast forward raising hazelnuts, then the neighbors are raising hazelnuts. There's been a lot of community with these, with our neighbors at the bottom of the hill, because sometimes we share equipment.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there was last summer they had to take up their hoses and Ken went down there and helped the neighbors with the hoses. And just here a week or two ago, we had to take out stumps and the neighbors were up here helping us and taking the firewood.
Yeah.
So there's still that sense of community.
Sure.
So it is somewhat out there still.
Yeah. So tell me about your dad, Georgia, Robert, Bobby, I guess, if we're going to call him that, but who sort of carried that forward in terms of the family farm, he was the kind of in charge when you got the Century Farm designation. So.
Yeah. So our 100 acres in 1976 turned 100 years old, and my mom and my dad and I went down to the state fair. And my dad, who had been chemo radiation, been dealing with cancer, and it was hot. It was a hot, stinking day, and we were all miserable.
The state fair is right at the end of the August, summer. It's always so muggy. Yeah.
So dad, but you know, he marched up on that stage, and the governor presented him with his certificate, and he turned around, and I will never, ever forget that big old smile, and his eyes were just twinkling because my dad had twinkly eyes. They just shimmered, and that moment was, it's etched in my mind, but I know it was etched in his as well. Yeah. It was really, because he
deserved it.
Well, and he always worked as a pipe fitter.
Yeah.
He wasn't a full-time farmer. Mm-hmm. So a gentleman farmer is basically what they would consider him.
Was a logger, and he was no help at all.
Well, he didn't want a farm, though, but he was a logger, and he worked.
Oh, he worked.
I mean, the family is a hardworking family.
I'm here with Derek Hill at Advantage Mortgage, and you had some advice you were wanting to put out there to prospective home buyers.
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy out there right now. The housing market is just blazing fast, especially in the first-time homebuyer range of prices.
Oh, cool.
So it's imperative that you find out all the ins and outs. You know, how much can you afford? What's your payment range that you want to be in? What type of loan program you're qualified for? Because there's a lot of no-money-down loan programs that are available, but they really might not be best for you. In my experience, those loans have an increased payment that if they had a little bit of money down, they wouldn't need. But the great thing about Canby is it's eligible for the USDA loan program, which is a no money down loan. But my point is, it's just super important to get it figured out before you start looking, because I've seen customers go find the house they love, they call me and they're like, you know, let's go. And then by the time we get everything dialed in, which can be in 4 hours, that house is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better. So I just want to make sure that consumers know, give us a call. Just give us, you know, let's meet, let's talk about it, let's get everything dialed in so that you know exactly what you're up against. And then you're ready. You can make that offer and kaflooey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
There's something about emotion and the ability to feel emotions that I think comes with great struggle that the folks that have experienced that, it creates a more of a capacity to feel joy. I think if you haven't experienced depths of great struggle or tragedy, you know, you maybe can't quite feel that kind of same kind of joy that somebody who has.
Well, and I think too, some of the joy was, because I can feel it when you pass it on to your kids. And dad knew at that time he would be able in his lifetime to pass on our heritage, our farm, our house to me. And that's with our sons. that's our hope as well, is that we can keep the farm financially stable and harvest our nets and make money at it. And we, Ken and I both work jobs.
Yeah.
So even though we farm, we still have, you know, I work at Thriftway at Cutsforth in the bakery, and he drives a cat bus. So that, as well as a community piece, that's really cool. And just a little side note, Frank Cutsforth and my dad, Bob Shear, played baseball together.
Oh, really?
In high school.
No way.
They played ball together. So Glenn.
Yeah.
Glenn and dad played ball together. So that's kind of, and now I work for Frank.
Yeah.
So it, that to me is kind of a cool little side note.
Yeah, that's just Cambie.
Yeah, it kind of is just Cambie.
Don't say anything about anybody.
Yeah.
Because you're probably talking to a cousin.
Right. Yeah. Your father, he was a World War II veteran.
Yep.
Served in Guinea.
He did.
Yeah.
He was a gunner, so he was on the ground, as I was told, shooting planes out of the sky. I don't know how true that is.
Right.
He never spoke of the war, really.
Really?
Did he talk to you about the war, Gloria?
Nope. Only the shells in the closet once a year.
Yeah.
What was that?
He brought home a whole bunch, a bag of shells
that he'd picked
and he
up
put
on.
And
seashells, or
and they weren't the big conks, but
small ones, really pretty, all polished, gorgeous. And every year I'd get to take them to school for show and tell. He'd go get them out of the top of the closet in Grandma's bedroom and bring them out, give them to me, and I'd take them to school. And when I got off that bus in the afternoon, he was right there waiting for me to get the shells back.
Yep.
Back in the top of the closet, they'd go until the next year.
And those were shells from Australia?
Australia.
Yeah. He picked them up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You were telling us a story earlier about George's father when you were a little kid. Wasn't it George's father?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, about in the
tractor. The
tractor.
Yeah.
He would pull the tractor up next to the mailbox. Our mailbox sat right outside one of the fields.
Yeah.
And he'd pull the tractor up and he'd give a great big old whistle.
Yeah, give us a demonstration of the whistle.
I was loved.
None of us could ever achieve that.
My brother did, but none of us girls ever did.
He never taught you, he said.
Well, he
you
tried.
Just couldn't do it. I tried and tried. That piercing, you could hear it.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you're talking the two fingers. And
it was like.
Yeah.
And I mean, he could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, he'd whistle and Mom would take me across the road, put me up on the tractor. And I would ride around on the tractor with him and he'd let me drive the tractor. And I'd do however many rounds he thought I should do.
Yeah.
And then he'd pull up by the mailbox and let out with the whistle and here she come, get me off the tractor. But boy, I just thought I was the cat's meow. Riding around, driving that tractor. I thought for sure I'd be a farmer.
And you said that whistle you could just hear for miles.
Oh, you could. Yeah. Grandma would hear him clear up at the corner.
Yeah.
I grew up when Dad whistled, you ran. That was how that whistle meant you better get your butt over here right now.
Yeah.
So that was
attention.
It was,
yeah. Well, it's a few years out, but we're coming up on the 150th is going to happen. We'll be back down at the state fair for that. But wanted to ask you, and Gloria as well, because you were kind of mentioning just on press yard what Ken and George have done, but kind of what the process has been like of now being in charge of the farm in this day and age, you know, very different than when great-great-grandpa George came here with from Kansas. But kind of what it's been like, maybe some of the challenges and maybe some of the joys as well and some of the sense of pride you have of you know, being able to steward this land that's been in your family for so long.
Yeah. Well, my dad he farmed and then he ended up leasing out a lot of the ground to the Ellis family, who we go to church with. And so as Dad got older, he worked less and less ground, and then he battled Alzheimer's, and so then my mom was in charge, and by then quite a bit of the land was leased to some local farmers. So we just would come out and help mom mow the yard, help in the garden, whatever, and then my mom passed, and so we moved here. And Ken had always wanted to do the hazelnuts. And I was like, I don't want to do hazelnuts. They're too much work. You got to prune them. You can't make any money. And he finally talked me into it. So that, we had our boys by then. They were teenagers, which was perfect age. They didn't think so, but we appreciated their backbone.
Right.
They were able to help dig holes and move trees. And so it was, we started out planting 10 acres. And we did the first like 1,000 trees by hand and decided we were going to hire it done. So we have since had people come plant for us. Although this year we did work with the Berkemeyers and get like 7 acres in between like 4 or 5 of us out there. So still a lot of hands on. A lot of hands on. Ken has done fantastic taking the reins as far as he's the lead. He orders the trees. He's like, okay, in 5 years we're planting again. And he's the financial guy, so he's done a great job keeping it prosperous. I mean, we break even. Which is what you hope.
That's like 1% of farming.
It is. Especially a small family farm, you know. We are not the agribusiness piece. We're a small family farm. So to break even and pay your taxes, you're happy. And that's how I grew up, was dad paying his taxes by what he made off the farm. And if he had a little something extra, it just went into the savings. I mean, so you just lived a little bit different focus with your finances. But it's been great. Our boys still come around and help out. You know, they've each, one's married and one's living up, bought property. So they both have a love of the land as well. So that's been kind of a transition.
And the farm is just beautiful. I mean, I've only been out here a couple times and seen a little bit of it, but like you said, Gloria, the obvious work that you guys have done is...
I am so proud of she and Ken.
Yeah.
It is amazing to me how hard they work. You know, it's, I don't get around well, so it just blows my mind. I mean, one minute they're here, the next minute they're there and clear up the road doing this and that, and it's just, they have done wonders, and I know her parents are so proud, as am I.
I have to laugh, though. Gloria, her kitchen window, before we put up these bushes, she could kind of look over. We kind of spy on each other and joke around. It's like, who is at your house today? So I love having family across the street. And Gloria, one day, she goes, you know, I'm looking out my kitchen window, and you're out there in that little flower bed, and I just wonder what the hell you're up to now. And I just start laughing.
Gloria. Oh, yeah. She's...
The little girl that wanted to come in the old scary house and look around, she still likes to know what's going on.
I do.
Well, we are almost out of time here. It's been so wonderful hearing more about this. Just like I said, just one of the families that has, you know, helped pioneer this area and forms part of that tapestry and that fabric of what makes our area so unique and special. Is there anything else that you want to share before we go? Any other stories or anything else that...
We probably can't say them on air.
Right. We could. I just have to censor a lot of it.
No, I just think that, you know,
We just love it out here, both of us. And I couldn't be more pleased to have Georgia here, because I took care of Georgia from the time she was about 10 months old until she was 9 years old. Her mom worked in Portland, and I babysat her. So she was just like my own. And now to be out here
together,
we have fun.
We do.
I can tell.
And there's that, hey, Gloria, you got any refried beans in your cupboard? I'll be over in a minute. I'll bring you a cup of sugar.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing these stories. Thank you for sharing these photos and these letters. I mean, these are treasures here, and I feel very blessed and privileged to have the chance to just, you know, that you would share some of that with me.
It's been fun.
Fun. Thank you.
Hey, how about some good news? I think we could all use it. Welcome to the Canby Now Community Board, where we would normally tell you about local events and other things happening around the community. That's much harder to do right now, so we're changing this segment just a little bit. Until normalcy returns, and it will, we want to use this space to share local efforts to help others who are less fortunate or more vulnerable to the outbreak. If you are offering help to the community and want to share information about that here, please get in touch with us by email at info@canbynowpod.com. Local telecommunications provider DirectLink announced last Wednesday that they would waive late fees for the next 60 days. There will also be no suspensions, disconnects, or attempts to collect on past due accounts during this period. Which is fantastic. I mean, the only thing worse than being laid off or isolated at home and unable to see friends and family would be having to do that without Netflix and Hulu. DirectLink also joined over 200 other service providers in committing to the Federal Communication Commission's Keep Americans Connected pledge in an effort to ensure uninterrupted broadband access during the coronavirus situation. The goal is to keep the millions of students and Americans now forced to work or study from home connected to the internet with reliable service. Our friends at the most beautiful place on earth, Swan Island Dahlias, have announced they will be selling pots of tulips and daffodils in their self-serve flower stands. Sacrilege, am I right? No, it's actually Swan Island's way of helping Wooden Shoe Tulip Farm in Woodburn, who had to cancel their annual tulip fest because of the coronavirus pandemic. Pots are $10 each and the stand is self-serve, so please use exact change. Swan Island is located at 995 Northwest 22nd Avenue. Effective immediately, all rides on the Canby Area Transit, or CAT, will be provided free of charge. The system will remain fareless until further notice. Also, the town's three main grocery stores, Fred Meyer, Thriftway, and Safeway, have announced that they will be opening from 7 to 8 a.m. for seniors and those with disabilities only. This is to allow the more vulnerable members of our community to shop in a safer environment. Canby Area Transit has shifted its start time from 8 a.m. to 6:45 a.m. to begin accommodating users who need to get to the stores during those early morning timeframes. All other routes and services are operating as usual, including the Route 99X and the Dial-A-Ride program. Buses are being disinfected at least daily, and CDC-approved disinfectants are available on all buses for use by drivers as needed. If you have any questions or concerns, please call 503-266-4022 and press 2 as soon as the recording begins. This will transfer the call directly to the dispatch office. Finally, we end with a local musician trying to make the best of a bad situation. Jesse Ray LeMaine isn't one to let something as small as, you know, all of her gigs being canceled, get in the way of performing. She and her wife drove around Canby this week with Jesse Ray playing a cappella concerts for friends from the back of their pickup truck. We thought we would bring some joy by delivering a concert, but from a distance, Jesse Ray said. Corona caroling, they called it. Here's what it sounded like. Thank you.
message to you. Singing, don't worry. Out of faith. Every little thing gonna be alright. Singing, don't worry. Out of faith. Every little thing gonna be alright. Oh, yeah.
Aw, thank you. That's so. Corona Caroline, I love it.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't, like, animal-related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest-running, locally-owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately, like, caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. The Camby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Camby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Camby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.